You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, this day in history, taking us back this week to 1924 for the appointment of young lawyer J. Edgar Hoover to the directorship of the Bureau of Intelligence. Bureau of Investigation, later to become the Federal Bureau of Intelligence. Sorry about that. J. Edgar Hoover, he was a veteran of the Palmer Raids, where there were these mass raids of sort of radicals and dissidents in the sort of post-World War I period. And he very much brought that attitude to the Bureau, which would take a very active role in monitoring dissent. However, they would sort of become more known for their publicity side, especially their cracking down on famous Depression-era outlaws such as John Dillinger, and they would really publicize this is what the Bureau does.
John Dillinger, 25 years ago today, America's most notorious desperado, held in a supposedly escape-proof jail presided over by a woman sheriff at Crown Point, Indiana, the cocky bad man bluffed his way out with a wooden gun. Posses hunted him for months following this most spectacular incident in a career of robberies, jailbreaks, and killings that terrorized the Midwest. In March, Dillinger had escaped, despite scores of heavily armed guards, and he eluded a nationwide manhunt for months. Until one summer night in Chicago, the FBI closed in as public enemy number one was leaving a North Side theater. The mysterious woman in red caused his downfall. The battle of the FBI against the freewheeling desperados of the early 30s was not over, but the career of the worst of them was ended with a gun and a tawdry disguise as mementos of a still legendary bad man.
So yes, less well known was the Bureau's work against sort of radical left-wingers, especially in the union movement, who were gathering pace in the Great Depression.
Just before that, someone has walked in, a ghost of Wire past, Harry Willis. Those long fans of the Thursday Wire will remember him. Harry, how are you doing? Come pop
just,
on
just
Jim's
take
mic.
Over my mic, yeah, why not?
Sorry to interrupt you, Ben.
Yeah?
Hi, guys.
Yeah, you'll remember that.
Hi, guys.
Smooth voice.
Smooth.
Yes, he's just done an interview. He's back.
I've come back here, Ron. Hopefully I'll be back to chat with you on the wire again soon.
But I'm still hosting. So anyway, here is something about Waterfront or something. I don't know.
Here are the first pictures of strike-paralyzed San Francisco in the grip of a general labor tie-up. Streets are deserted as surface cars cease running and citizens unable to travel remain indoors. Only a few automobiles can operate because most filling stations have exhausted their supplies and can obtain no more gasoline. Motor trucks stand idle where their drivers left them. Very little food is being moved into the city, and with a threat of famine before them, crowds jam the markets. But supplies dwindle rapidly, and there is no meat to be had. To the possibility of mob violence is added fear of pestilence, while on every hand, closed shops give mute testimony to the disastrous economic consequence of the strike.
Yes, that was part one of the Stain History. Oh, no, we're not doing a part. All right, going straight through to it. Yes, in 1935, the BOI would officially be renamed the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and it operated sort of the United States Domestic Counterintelligence Arm, as portrayed in the fictional portrayal of a G-man, or FBI agent, Dick Tracy, in his pursuit of foreign spy, and probably an anti-Semitic stereotype, Nicholas Sarnoff.
Sarnoff, the man without a country, mystery figure of seven nations, master spy. For 20 years, although his name was linked with the most atrocious outrages against peaceful governments, nothing could be proven. Sarnoff, the most hated man on earth. From where did he come? Where did he go? No one knew. His appearance in any country meant always trouble. His gigantic spiring encircled the earth. His agents were everywhere. Horrible democratic America was not overlooked by Sarnoff. The parade of events gives you a reenactment of Nicholas Zarnoff's capture. While crowds held back by police watched breathlessly, Dick Tracy and his G-men closed in on the arch-criminal, trapped for the first time in his sinister career. Here you see Tracy giving last-minute instructions to his G-men. Watch while Tracy, covered by his G-men's barrage, braves death to smoke Zarnoff out. blinded by the tear gas, Nicholas Zaroff had only one alternative: surrender. And a few moments later, he was in the custody of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. In this building on October 22nd, Zaroff was found guilty. Judge Stoddard passes the sentence.
Nicholas Zaroff, under the state law of California, the court sentences you to death by lethal gas. And may God have mercy on your soul.
In closing, let us hear from the man responsible for Zaroff's capture. Dick Tracy of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Nicholas Zaroff was like a rat gnawing at the foundations of democracy. Like any other rat carrying germs of plague and disease, he had to be exterminated. I sincerely hope that his execution on June 14th will serve as a warning to any other spies or troublemakers who might think America is easy pickings.
And on that jaunty note, that is the end of part one of This Day in History. Part two will continue after the break.
Move over, Mathematics and Statistics Awareness Month. May is New Zealand Music Month, and 95BFM is getting involved. Every weekday for the whole of May, we're going to have a different local band playing live in our lounge and broadcast direct to your ear holes. Check out the 95BFM website each week to see who will be playing and when. Financial Literacy Month is so April. New Zealand Music Month, live in the 95BFM lounge, thanks to New Zealand On Air Music. Thanks.
I know where you were last night.
Craig, it's not...
Am I not deep enough? I can be emotional. I can break the fourth wall.
Wink.
I know we don't have the same history together.
But I love both of you.
No! Make a choice. Me or theatre.
Live for drama? Take some stage direction from our resident theatre expert. What's on and what's good on the Auckland stage, 9 a.m. every Friday on Breakfast. Stage direction with Kate Pryor, brought to you by the Vic Devonport.
Yes, we now return to This Day in History, looking at the career of J. Edgar Hoover, first director of the FBI. So even though he'd clashed with the Democrat president, FDR, during World War II and had generally not gotten on well with the Democrats, he was sort of kept on, most likely because he had sort of filing cabinets stuffed with secrets on everyone, pretty much, some of which would be then leaked to the famous House Un-American Activities Committee in the post-World War II period. This was McCarthyism. And even though Joe McCarthy's gotten the credit for that, it really was Hoover's sort of endeavour. And he'd leak this info and, indeed, make a public appearance.
The growing menace of communism arouses the House of Representatives Un-American Activities Committee. Among the well-informed witnesses testifying is J. Edgar Hoover, head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Mr. Hoover speaks with authority on the subject.
The Communist Party of the United States is a fifth column, if there ever was one. It is far better organized than were the Nazis in occupied countries prior to their capitulation. They are seeking to weaken America, just as they did in their era of obstruction when they were aligned with the Nazis. Their goal is the overthrow of our government. There is no doubt as to where a real communist loyalty rests. Their allegiance is to Russia, not the United States. Communism in reality is not a political party. It is a way of life, an evil and malignant way of life. It reveals a condition akin to disease that spreads like an epidemic. And like an epidemic, a quarantine is necessary to keep it from infecting this nation.
Yes,
well, there's a nice little musical end to the clips.
Yeah, it does weirdly sort of clashing with what they're talking about, but you know, that's how they did it, so I gotta leave it in.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yes, thank you. By 1964, Hoover had reached retirement age, but he would again be kept on through the job, this time through an official proclamation by President Lyndon Johnson.
Edgar, the law says that you must retire next January when you reach your 70th birthday. And knowing you as I do, Edgar, I know you won't break the law. But the nation cannot afford to lose you, and therefore, by virtue of and pursuant to the authority vested in the President of the United States, I have just now signed an executive order exempting you from compulsory retirement for an indefinite period of time. And again, Edgar, congratulations, and accept the gratitude of a grateful nation.
Thank you.
am indeed very grateful and appreciative of the action that you've taken, Mr. President. I think after a career as I've had in the FBI, the most compensating thing that could ever happen would be the action that you have taken today.
He definitely had some dirt on him.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
I mean, dirt on everyone, especially JFK.
Something bad. I hope it comes out eventually.
So anyway, yes, and this was, of course, it wasn't probably just the information. He probably still had some use as like a, you know, he knew how the FBI worked, especially as this was the decade, the 60s, when you had the sort of new left coming in, a lot of social turmoil. And now, even though the new left was sort of quite different to the old left, Hoover pretty much just saw it as yet another incarnation of exactly
more
the same
bloody
thing.
Bloody commies, exactly. Reds under the bed.
And he would take, again, always the same role he'd taken against them. And if anything, probably a more active one that either reflected more concern of it or just that he was getting very old. And so there was various sort of excesses that the FBI committed this time, but probably the most flagrant was the shooting of Black Panther Fred Hampton in Chicago.
State's attorney's police arrived at Fred Hampton's West Side apartment, half a block from Panther headquarters, at 4:45 this morning. They had a search warrant authorizing them to look for illegal weapons. The state's attorney's office says its men were fired upon after identifying themselves at the door, and that Hampton and another man were killed in the 15-minute gun battle which followed. Two policemen and four of the nine people in the apartment were wounded. Hampton's body was found in bed. Panther Bobby Rush charges it was the raiding party, not the Panthers, who did the shooting.
Murder. The pigs murdered Deputy Chairman Fred Hampton while he lay in bed. I prove it to the world that Fred Hampton was murdered by the pigs. Their lies, their oinking to the people can't bear up to the evidence that we have that they murdered our Deputy Chairman in cold blood as he lay in his bed asleep.
Police displayed a cache of 14 revolvers and shotguns and about 1,000 rounds of ammunition, which they said had been taken from the apartment. Cook County State's Attorney Edward Hanrahan commended his men for bravery and restraint.
The immediate, violent, criminal reaction of the occupants in shooting at announced police officers emphasizes the extreme viciousness of the Black Panther Party. So does their refusal to cease firing at the police officers when urged to do so several times.
J. Edgar Hoover would die in office around 50 years after this day in history, 1924.
Good evening. J. Edgar Hoover has died at the age of 77, the cause given as high blood pressure. For almost every living American generation, Hoover, the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, stood as the symbol of incorruptible law enforcement, an untouchable who liked to boast that his men could not be bought. Hoover had dinner last night with his old friend and longtime FBI associate, 71-year-old Clyde Tolson, and then went to his home where his housekeeper found him this morning, dead beside his bed. In 1924, during the Coolidge administration, Hoover took over the then scandal-ridden Bureau. Thus began a service that spanned eight presidencies and almost half a century. The eight presidents under whom he worked, both Democratic and Republican, gave Hoover virtually a free hand to run an FBI he had cleared of political factionalism and made into an investigative organization envied around the world for its efficiency and high standards. Yet toward the later years of his life, Hoover came under increasing criticism from liberals, who saw his operations as a big brother-type threat to civil liberties. He was accused of using the FBI as his own public relations instrument, and his preoccupation with the threat of communism seemed dated. Yet Hoover himself saw communism as a real threat to the security of America.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.